Pop Spotting 220.
Friday, March 9th, 2012.
Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
It's Feedback Friday, and as promised, we'll start off with a great mix of movie talk.
That's right, but then we'll share a few book picks and some of your thoughts on television. But as you mentioned, we're going to start with the movie talk, and we're going to start with a voicemail.
Hi, Ryan and Jen. This is Megan in Pennsylvania, and I just listened to one of your last podcasts before the hiatus, and all I have to say is I always want to see Liam Neeson punch the wall. Sorry if that doesn't appeal to you guys. That's like my dream. I haven't seen the movie yet. We actually went to see the weekend that came out. My parents and I went to see Red Tails. And I don't know if anybody's talked about that in the podcast yet, but we actually liked it a lot. It was very predictable. I mean, it was George Lucas. They telegraphed a lot of things, and the dialogue was extremely kind of, you know, I guess didactic is the word, but it was still a very good movie. And I thought that the aerial stunts were just quite good. And, you know, the actors were reasonably likable and all that. So I give that a solid thumbs up. Not a masterpiece, but definitely worth seeing. So probably a lot of people will be catching that on DVD at this point. But anyway, be looking forward to hearing you guys come back from the hiatus. And aloha.
Aloha. Mahalo, Megan, for your call. And yeah, I know there's a market out there for people who want to see punches with wolves with Liam Neeson. And for all we know, we're going to be checking that out as well. But Red Tails, wow, you know, I remember hearing briefly about it, but almost like The Help, it didn't register with me. And from what I recall, it wasn't really well received.
I don't think it was. And I do remember a film in the 90s that came out that was called Tuskegee Airmen. And it seemed to me that it got a lot more critical attention than Red Tails did. And it might have even had some of the same cast.
And I keep getting Red Tails confused with Red, and I think there might even been another film with Tails in the title. Just I just completely lost track of it. But yeah, Cuba Gooding Jr., Terrence Howard, I think he was the one that was originally in the other Tuskegee film. And, you know, Lucas has tried to make this movie for over 20 years. I'm glad he got it done. But I think, as you said, you're probably right. It might be something that we're going to check out on DVD. But we're glad that you and your family enjoyed it. We certainly want to hear, if you do catch The Gray, what you thought about that one in the end. Continuing the movie talk, another voicemail.
Oh, hey, Ryan and Jen. This is Cheryl in Canada. It was really fun hearing your podcast this morning with your very musical-minded guest. I don't really follow music myself much, but I loved hearing his passion and interest. Now, I do follow movies fairly closely in the last while, and so I found your Flick Chart podcast, I guess that one was yesterday, I found that one interesting, and it made me realize how much more drawn I am to art house movies than typical Hollywood fare. I can't say that really any of those movies that you mentioned yesterday are very highly on my radar as movies that I treasure or, you know, care anything about. The ones that did stand out, you mentioned Trainspotting. I found that movie extremely difficult, but I did think it was superb as far as how it was done. I happen to have a personal favorite for The Little Mermaid just because I love the colors and the music in there. So that one is just a personal favorite. Silence of the Lambs was certainly a superb movie. American Beauty. And there were some others, you know, Good Will Hunting and Beautiful Mind. There were a few on there that, okay, they were, you know, okay movies, but nothing that I walked away with, you know, really thinking about for very long. Anyway, so I just realized that I'm kind of out of sync with which I already knew. I already knew that I wasn't really crazy about that type of movie. Anyway, thanks for letting me have this call. Bye.
No, thank you for calling, Cheryl, letting you have this call. I mean, good golly, we're glad you do call, and we wish more people would. But I think we can identify with maybe preferring or being more connected to art house films, for sure.
I like all kinds of movies, honestly. I like a good popcorn movie, but I also like a good, quiet, thoughtful foreign film. The only problem being that there aren't a whole lot of places in this town to catch the latter.
Yeah, I mean, we used to have the Varsity, which we went to quite a bit. Now I think we have to go all the way out to Kahala mall for the most where they show the most art house films. Of course, you do get to see these things eventually, and in fact, they're pretty well represented on streaming services as well as on DVD. But yeah, we like both. I mean, we're glad we got to see Meek's Cut Off, which is a very unusual film, one I might have actually fallen asleep in the theater. But we also like Fast Five and, you know, really big, noisy, ridiculous movies at the same time. But, you know, I'm glad she spoke up, and I'm glad that nobody really protested, for example, our art house double feature a few weeks ago. So we're happy with the open-mindedness. And, you know, the artist won Best Picture. I'm interested in seeing that. Cheryl mentioned on Facebook she really liked Separation, and I think that was one that we wanted to see too. So.
Yeah, Film Spotting really loved A Separation, and what they said about it really made me interested in it, so I'm hoping we can catch it.
So, you know, you can stay tuned for those reviews as well as the big Hollywood fair. But now, an email on our Flick Chart show taking issue with some comments. Lauren emailed us to say, when you were discussing Breakfast Club versus The Little Mermaid, I'm not upset that you chose The Breakfast Club, but I am upset that Jen said that the movie, quote, says to little girls that being who they are isn't good enough, unquote. I strongly disagree. In fact, I feel the movie delivers the completely opposite message. Jen mentioned that Ariel's entire existence is about being human, and while this is true, she said it as if that was a negative thing. Ariel identified as a human. The movie displayed that it is important to strive for what you want based on how you feel. It's about knowing who you are and believing in that despite disapproval by others. I think it's an empowering message. Ariel was an independent female and an explorer. She loved to travel and learn. She knew what she wanted and she went for it. She did not need Prince Eric. In fact, the only person that she needed was Ursula for her magic that was able to change her into a human. Ariel could not be her true self without being human physically. This movie is also a strong statement about social norms and taboos because she was so intrigued by the human culture but was boxed in by her own society. King Triton was a dictator and an isolationist. Finally, thinking of The Breakfast Club in comparison, they do have a funny connection. The main focus of that movie is that each person realizes that there is more to them than what people see immediately. However, the movie gave the impression that you can't really get out of your social situation, but you can learn to be happy with it anyway. So maybe in a more realistic movie like The Breakfast Club, it shows that in life, sometimes you have to settle and accept your situation, whether you identify with it or not, and find things to be happy with. And maybe in a more fantastical movie like The Little Mermaid, it inspires little girls to never settle and to always work toward breaking down barriers.
Okay, I knew I was going to get a lot of crap about what I said.
That's not a lot of crap. I think she's making a really good point.
Yeah, no, she is making a really good point. And when she puts it that way, I can totally see her point. I think, though, that there's a difference between somebody identifying as something else and then somebody changing completely into something else.
Yeah.
I don't...
Well, I mean, for one thing, it's Flick Chart, so it's supposed to be off the cuff. If we right. could have had a big philosophical discussion about it, I think that for the most part, people do come away from The Little Mermaid with an empowering message. And so I kind of expected that. But I would also say that it's one thing, like you said, to support someone who identifies it versus letting or using magic to change them into that. We had to edit her email, but she even talks about plastic surgeons helping people become what they identify as. And for me, that's how it gets a little fuzzy. If Zach, our son, and this is possible, frankly, he's such an interesting kid. He said, Dad, Mom, I identify as a dog. I really feel that deep down inside, I am a dog. I think we could probably make a case for supporting that. You know, if he's old enough to make that decision, we'll build him a dog house. We'll feed him on the floor. If that's really what makes him happy. On the other hand, would we allow surgical changes to turn him into a dog? That might be harder. And if we could take a magic wand and turn him into a dog, I don't think we would take that step. So I think that's mostly what you were identifying with. But I think Lauren makes a fantastic point, and we're glad that she reached out with a great analysis of The Little Mermaid and even The Breakfast Club. That was kind of nice at the end. Let's get more movie talk here from Greg.
Greg writes on Facebook, I don't think I will see Meek's Cut Off. I watched Old Joy and Wendy and Lucy, and they both bored me to tears. Short running times, it felt like 3-hour epics. I just don't get Reichardt.
Well, you know, and I, like I said, I think I'm happy I saw Meek's Cut Off, but I won't go out of my way to see it again. And I'm not sure if that was inspiring to me to see these other two movies, which a lot of people said were great by Kelly Reichardt. card.
I really like Michelle Williams, so I think I'm willing to give Wendy and Lucy a shot. Mm. I don't know about Oldjoy, but I am interested in seeing all three just to get an idea of what Reichardt's movies are like.
Well, I'm not sure if I'm that curious, and I can totally understand what Greg is saying, and I'm glad for him to be honest. Lou writes on the blog, I saw Attack the Block at the Metronome in San Francisco last year. I can't remember how I heard about it, but I made a point to see it. It only played there for a few days. Anyway, just like you guys, I thought it was great and hit on all cylinders. I think I'll add it to my Netflix queue and watch it again. You did mention that it had some good featurettes. FYI, Jodie Whittaker, who plays Sam, looked familiar to me too, so when I got home, I looked her up on IMDb. She played Beverly, the receptionist in St. Trinians, a film from 2007. If you haven't seen St. Trinians, you'll have to get it on Netflix or something to rent it. St. Trinians is a gem. Just check out the cast list. Great cast, campy plot, lots of humor, and some great music too. It's a bit offbeat for mainstream audiences, but it's right up my alley. I think you will like it a lot. So did you look up St. Trinians?
Yeah, it also stars Rupert Everett, Colin Firth, which, count me in, Russell Brand, Lena Headey from Game of Thrones, and Gemma Arterton.
Yeah, and Rupert is actually playing a cross-dressing person. He's playing Miss Fritton. I guess this is part of a series of films that has actually stretched back to the 1950s. Mm-hmm. It does look very strange. It does look very unusual, but I think Lou's got our number. I think he's right that we'd like it. And again, I would want to see something else that Jodie Whittaker is in.
Matt writes on Facebook, have you guys seen the movie Hugo? I saw it last night and loved it. At first, I was unsure about going to a PG movie, since they're often kind of dull, but my friends wanted to go, and I went along. A few scenes might be frightening to younger kids, but for the most part, it's a good, clean family movie.
Well, we're very curious about Hugo, we weren't when it was out. I think that something about it just didn't really draw us in, but of course, when it got the 11 Oscar nominations and won 5 of them, I mean, tied The Artist for the number of wins there, that was enough to say that maybe we might have missed something there. We were this close to picking up at Costco yesterday.
Yeah, we're standing there in the aisle debating whether or not we were going to get it.
Yeah, so we're certainly going to check out Hugo. It did win for cinematography, art direction, visual effects, sound editing, and mixing. A lot of technical stuff, though. Not so much of the big wins for mm-hmm. it. But, anything that with Scorsese's name attached that our kids could actually watch, I'm kind of curious what that's like.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think this is Scorsese's first PG-rated film.
Well, I'm not sure if it's his first ever, but it's certainly his first in recent memory and, probably his first film in a long time that didn't involve people getting whacked or something. But we'd love to hear from other Hugo fans, but I think that the next time we make it to Costco, it will probably fall into our shopping cart.
Jeffrey writes on Facebook, I just finished Leon the Professional. Wow. I heard from Film Spotting that it was in their top 5 hitman movies. If you haven't seen this, see it. Natalie Portman was like 11 or 12 when they shot it. She is the best kid actor I think I've ever seen. Mm. I'm going to look up all her work. I think the first time I realized who she was in Thor, but her other work is now top on my radar. Anyone else's thoughts? I'm sure somebody can explain it better than me.
Well, we're fans of Leon for sure.
It's a very unusual movie. It was a lot more sweet and childlike, but yet a lot more brutal than I even anticipated, and just kind of the juxtaposition of the two things really threw me, but it is a really interesting film.
I enjoyed the humor of it, the quirk of it, then yeah, I agree, it's charming, but it is a little disturbing on that level. But wow, that was actually her first performance, her first big screen role, Natalie Portman, and I think it's interesting that he remembers her from Thor, of all things. I mean, she's been in a lot of stuff. I think her most mainstream film or role was in the Star Wars prequels, but she was also very recently in Black Swan,
right.
A lot of critical acclaim. I thought it was a pretty intense performance, a good film.
Well, talking about movies that she did when she was very young, it was part of a double feature. We talked about Heat, and she was very young when she did Heat, and I think she's one of my favorite parts of that movie.
Okay, so Heat and Leon the Professional might be a double feature that you might try at home. Thanks, Jeffrey. John B. also replied, Leon is really excellent and well done. It's probably up there with Ronin as my favorite hitman/chase-type movie. And I agree. And actually, although it was that Film Spotting topic that I think Jeffrey's mentioning, it could be a top 5 for us. So we'd love to hear your lists as well. Let's switch gears, though, and talk about books, beginning with Karen. She writes, I've listened to you through all of your Lost podcasts. Thank you for it all. And I love Pop Spotting. I thought Jen might be interested in a book that I'm reading, Lady Almina and the Real Downton Abbey, The Lost Legacy of Highclere Castle. It's written by the Countess of Carnarvon. She and the current Earl of Carnarvon live at Highclere now. And I say, wow. And I didn't even know that there were still countesses and counts living in this place. I thought it was just a big museum that people went to visit.
I had no idea. And I've been fascinated by British nobility and royalty since Princess Di's wedding when I was 8. So, that's the kind of thing that I always love to read. Just anything British and anything about nobility really turns me on.
And I think this is right up anyone's alley that love the series. It's written by Lady Viona. She's the 8th countess and great-granddaughter in-law of Lady Almina, and Lady Almina is the basis of Cora on the show. Mm. And actually, Lady Almina did turn Highclere Castle into a hospital and a convalescent home, and clearly the release of this book is tied to the success of the series. It does skip kind of the darker last few chapters of her life, but again, if you ate that stuff up, I think you're going to want to pick up this book.
Megan writes, has anyone read any of the Woolt stories or novellas by Hugh Howey? I've just finished the first two. While the first one was stronger, both were good. There's two more available that I'm most likely going to grab soon. Just wondering.
You know, I'm not familiar with these books.
I've heard a lot about them, and I'm really, really interested.
Yeah, it's called the Molly Fide series, and Wool is, it's right up our alley in terms of the post-apocalyptic world. It's about this underground society, and I like, in many ways, I'm always enchanted more about the stories that create the things that we read and watch, and this started with a novella, 68 pages long, but now just a couple of months ago, Wool 5 came out, and that was 60,000 words. So clearly, I think Hugh Howey really got into telling this story. Got a lot of support, obviously, from fans of it. And you can even get an omnibus version of it, 548 pages with everything in it. So maybe that would make a good birthday or Christmas gift for a reader. And if anyone else has read The Wool Stories by Hugh Howey, please do write in. And here at the end of our bookcase, we did get a great review from MM Jamalama on Twitter, who sent in an email.
I've enjoyed many of your book suggestions, and I thought I might add one of my own. This is a category I don't believe I've heard you share, that is children's books. And I mean children's books that are so entertaining that adults quite possibly enjoy them even more than their kids or students. There are lots of children's authors that fall under this banner, but I'm going to recommend one author in particular. Chris Van Allsburg is an American author and illustrator of over 25 children's books. He's the recipient of several Caldecott medals for his amazing stories. You're probably familiar with two of his books, The Polar Express and Jumanji, both of which were later adapted into successful movies. Van Allsburg breaks out of the comfortable world of children's literature to explore the darker side of human nature.
For example, his books, The Sweetest Fig is about a selfish man who is suddenly given the opportunity to make his wildest dreams come true. His greed is eventually his downfall. Now, this is not an unusual moral for a children's storybook, but Van Allsburg's chilling characterization of the selfish man brings a frightening tone to the narrative. Allsburg's drawings are particularly notable for their use of perspective. In many cases, his illustrations are drawn from a child's eye level. This viewpoint appeals to children because it conveys the world as they see it. It may also appeal to adults because they may unconsciously perceive the world as they did when they were children.
One of my favorites is The Mysteries of Harris Burdick, which is a collection of illustrations with only one sentence for each illustration. This collection continues the themes of darker undertones and was the inspiration for the short story The House on Maple Street, written by Stephen King. More recently, there was a book published called The Chronicles of Burdick, where an all-star cast of some of the best-selling storytellers each wrote a story to go with one of the illustrations from Von Allsburg's book. Other notable titles include The Wreck of the Zephyr, The Witch's Broom, Zathura, The Wretched Stone, and The Garden of Abdul Ghazazi. I think you will find after you read and look at one or two of his books, you will return to your public library to check out any of his titles that you can find on the shelf. And if you find Van Allsburg's illustrations as enchanting as my family, you might enjoy visiting his website, where you will learn how he was admitted to art school after never having taken an art class.
Well, that's a great review. And, you know, I'm not familiar with this author or these series, although, of course, I've heard of The Polar Express and Jumanji.
I had no idea they were by the same author.
Yeah, and actually, you know, it seems that we do have a tendency to cover books, young adult literature that adults really get into. So actually, right. I think this review was perfect for our show. And you can visit the website. I'm really intrigued by the idea of these illustrations. And the website is chrisvanallsburg.com. And I'm sure you can Google that as well to look at these pictures. But thanks once again, Jamalama, for that book review. But before we close, let's get to some TV talk.
Brooke writes, so I'm behind on the shows, really behind. I just listened to the Downton Abbey show, which came at a good time for me because I've only watched the first two episodes of season 1. But I love it so far. Have either of you ever checked out the 2002-2003 reality series called Manor House? It aired in the UK in 02 as the Edwardian Country House, then here on PBS in 03. It was a completely riveting historical reality show about a family who was taken from a modern-day London and placed in a real Edwardian country house where they are tasked with living by the societal rules of that time. They have a full staff of servants, all regular people who also have to strictly follow the rules. I love this series so much, I actually bought the DVDs and have watched it through several times. I recommend it to anyone who needs a sort of Downton Abbey fix during its hiatus. Also, Jen, I'm about halfway through with East of Eden. What an amazing book. I can't believe I haven't read it before.
Well, I love the idea of this series. It's kind of like Big Brother, but with much more interesting constraints than just a bunch of whiny young people getting mad at each other. But
I did catch Frontier House, which I believe aired the season after Manor House.
Yeah, it's part of a series. There was 1900 House, Frontier House, the 1940s House, and I'm definitely intrigued by the entire concept of it. I read a couple of reviews about this show and how the butler that they cast as the butler was actually an architect, and you know, how it was for him to be in such a lowly place, and really how the person who was appointed the head of the house really let it get to his head and everything. So that's a great recommendation. Philip from the UK emails and says, "Hi there, Jen, you Anglophile. I discovered you guys by way of the Forgotten Flicks podcast, and I went on to download a few of your podcasts, including the Golden Oldies. So are you familiar with Garth Marenghi's Dark Place? Superb cult comedy from here. Honestly, I'm sure you'll like or even love it. Keep up the good work."
Yeah, Philip, thank you so much. He actually sent us a copy of Garth Marenghi's Dark Place along with a copy of The Globe and some British candy. So thank you, Philip.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. We're certainly going to watch it. I mean, it only lasted a season, unfortunately, but I love the concept. Even though it came out in 2004, it's basically a show within a show where they it's about a television series that was produced in the 1980s that never aired. And so they kind of make fun of the fashion, of course, and the bad special effects and mistakes in production and everything. So, you know, that concept just really appeals to me. Apparently it was on the Sci-Fi Channel and Adult Swim, but we completely missed it. But only 6 episodes, we are going to watch Dark Place. But to wrap up our show, perhaps one more TV comment from a special guest.
In the Yay Us Files, Christopher Kubasik, the creator of The Booth at the End, writes, "Hey, thanks so much for the terrifically kind words. So glad you enjoyed the show. A reaction like yours is all I could have wanted when I was struggling to piece together the show and I started working with it."
Well, Christopher, our pleasure.
Yes.
You know, thank you for making The Booth at the End so that we could watch it and talk about it and share our love. And again, that goes back to Joel of the Forgotten Flicks podcast.
Yes.
So there's some great cross-pollination going on, but we appreciate your comment. We appreciate all comments here on Pop Spotting. And whether you agree or disagree with what we say about movies, music, or books, or whatever, we hope that you'll take the time to let us know and allow us to share it on the show.
You can leave a voicemail at 815-310-0808. You can email us at feedback@popspotting.net, or you can comment on our blog at popspotting.net.
You can also post your thoughts on the Pop Spotting page on Facebook at facebook.com/popspotting, and you can also tweet us on Twitter at twitter.com/popspotting.
We'll be back as soon as we can with more pop talk. For now, we want to thank Dan Pashman of The Sporkful for our theme song.
Yes, speaking of great podcasts, and of course, thank you all for listening to our little show. For Pop Spotting, I'm Ryan.
And I'm Jen.
Aloha.